You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, Simon Fraser University Campus Radio, streaming on the internet at www.cjsf.ca.
The Empire's foundation is beginning to crack. Don't be surprised that we have a resurgence of white supremacy, that we have characters like Trump. Denial, not explaining to people, not talking honestly about the cracks, what it means when your empire has that fun ride up begin to be replaced by the much less fun ride down. Denial is never a good idea.
That's Richard Wolff, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Richard Wolff on the United States of Denial. States can't easily accept unpleasant realities, like their power is waning. America is no different. In geopolitics, China is an ascending power and challenging U.S. hegemony. Unlike the past, China can't be easily pushed around. Its top diplomat says Washington is in no position to make demands of China. China's GDP is projected to pass the United States in the next decade. The U.S., riven by internal contradictions, ever-growing inequality, and factionalism, is losing ground to China. But in one area, it remains dominant, the military. It is building new bases in the Philippines, completing an arc of U.S. forces around China. How would Washington respond if China surrounded the U.S. with bases? Denial is never a good idea, says economist Richard Wolff. We have to face what's going on. Otherwise, we're going to get ourselves into one mess after another. Our guest today is the renowned economist and political analyst Richard Wolff. He's professor of economics emeritus at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, and he's currently a visiting professor at the New School in New York. The New York Times calls him America's most prominent Marxist economist. He spoke in New York at the end of January. And now, Richard Wolff.
I am going to be describing to you what the situation is with the United States' economic system, which has a name. It's called capitalism. And it is, to give you a hint of where we're going, it is a system in very deep doo-doo. It is in the greatest difficulty that I have ever seen in my life. And you can tell from my white hair that I've been around a while. I never expected to see what I am experiencing. And I imagine for many of you, it is the same. Unless you are committed to something my psychotherapist wife explains to me as the problem of denial. Not a river in Egypt, but an inability to confront what it is that's going on, because it's frightening. It's a very human thing to do. It's like a little child who puts his or her hands in front of her face when there's a scary dog in the neighborhood, because she still imagines at age 3 that if you don't see it, it isn't there. And if you don't see what's going on around us, then perhaps it isn't there. And that is something which our political leaders and our cultural leaders and our economic leaders, that's one thing they all have in common with very few exceptions, namely a commitment to denial. So my presentation today is going to try to break through all the mechanisms of denial that surround us in order to tell you what I think is going on. I'm not infallible. I make mistakes like everybody else. But this is the fruit of a lifetime of observing U.S. capitalism, which I was born in the United States in Youngstown, Ohio. I've lived and worked here all my life. I have never seen anything like the situation we are in now. And to give you the framework and then jump in, I think that the history of the world is a sequence with interruptions, but a sequence of empires. The Greek, the Roman, the Persian, the Egyptian, the Chinese, I mean, I could go on. And they all have something in common. They are born usually out of the demise of another empire. They evolve and change over a period of time, running from a few decades to a few centuries, and then they die. The most recent one, perhaps the most and best studied, was the British Empire, which, depending on how you want to count, goes from around the 16th century to the end of the 19th, more or less. And out of the disintegration of the British Empire, literally punctuated by the Independence War, and a part of that empire broke away. In an important lesson, the empire denied that this was building, even though it was building across the entirety of the 18th century. Denied it. And then in 1776, the denial blew up in its face as the colonists here in this part of the British Empire wanted its independence. And a war was fought, which, to the surprise and chagrin of the British Empire and George III sitting on his throne in England, the British lost. Not to be forgetful, let me remind you that in 1812, they tried again, and they lost again. And with that set in motion, the disintegration of the British Empire, which ended in World War I. Out of it emerged the American Empire. American capitalism across the 19th century resolved certain key internal contradictions, holding them back, most notably the bizarre coexistence in this country of a capitalist Northeast and Midwest and a slave South. That was resolved by the willful destruction of slavery by the capitalists. Remember, the Civil War is the expropriation without compensation of the single most important wealth of the South in this country. The slave. The slave was emancipated and thereby the white master impoverished. The very stark disregard for the sanctity of private property. And capitalism, having destroyed its competitor with enormous violence, took off. Starting in 1870, the United States capitalism had a century of economic growth. The most amazing thing is, if you look at the statistics, crude as they are, especially in the early years, the United States grew uninterruptedly for that century, roughly 1870s to the 1970s. Every decade, real wages of workers were higher than the decade before, even across the Great Depression. Profits grew even faster. So you had this bizarre situation, quite rare in the world, of a capitalism that was able to give rising profits to its capitalists and rising wages to the mass of its workers, with, of course, the exception of those workers with the bad luck to not have been born white. Very important that they sink in. Why? Because if you do something like this, if you have a century of economic growth under an economic system like capitalism, it isn't so surprising that you think of the United States as exceptional, because in that regard, it was. If you're religious, perhaps you think God likes Americans better than he or she likes other people. If you're not religious, you will attribute it to who knows what, entrepreneurship, my professors used to like to say, whatever in the world that's supposed to be. But it was exceptional. And Americans, whatever their other orientations, took on the notion that we live in an exceptional place. And they then really ran with that ball and began to imagine that this exceptionality was somehow inherent, and so it would last forever. It was upward and onward, the American economy, and it would carry our culture around the world to become the world's culture. Our political system would be the model. Our military would push away those backward people who wanted to resist. It became, and I use this word carefully, crazy. And of course, when the signs began to emerge that this empire, the United States empire, after a 100-year rise up, was beginning to show the signs of decline, of peaking, of breaking, it's not surprising that the leaders of such a system with such a history would be deep into denying what had happened, not seeing what was exploding around them. Over the last few days, Americans have been confronted yet again with the level of violence committed every day somewhere in this country, and it is getting worse. It's the same issue. It's the same denial. Okay, what exactly is being denied? Over the last 40 years, roughly 1980 to now, we have seen, and all economists of all political persuasions understand this and see it. We all use basically the same numbers, and with a few exceptions, of course, always we come to the same conclusion. Over the last 40 years, there has been a radical redistribution of wealth from the bottom and the middle to the top. The top 10% have done the really well. The top 5%, even better. The top 1%, even better than that. And the top 0.1%, the best of all. And you know them because in our society, we adulate them. I'm talking about Bill Gates or Elon Musk or Warren Buffett or fill in the blank. They became much richer. The top 10% became richer all across those 40 years. This was partly because we changed the tax laws in this country. We relieved taxes from corporations and the rich, and we switched them onto the middle and bottom. It was done by Republicans. It was done by Democrats. It didn't matter who was in the White House or who was controlling the houses of the Congress. The Democrats did it a little less quickly. The Republicans were a bit more intense. Speed varied. Content did not. Even more important than the changes in taxes was the phenomena of the relationship between capital and labor, that is, corporations and business on the one hand, and the mass of people, employees, on the other. As I've told you, real wages went up for a century, 1870s, 1970. Why 1970 do I pick that? Because that's when real wages in America stopped rising. Absolutely epoch-making change. What is a real wage? It's the amount of money you get adjusted for the prices you pay. So, for example, if your wages go up 10%, you might feel good, but if all the prices you have to pay went up by 10%, you're no better off with a 10% bigger money wage than you were without it because the prices have adjusted. We all know that in economics, so we don't use money wages. We use what's called real wages. Wages understood in terms of what it can afford you to buy. Goods, services, food, clothing, shelter, entertainment, education, medical care, whatever. Real wages rose. In other words, the money wages workers had from 1870 to 1970 rose more than the prices did. So they really got more stuff that they could afford to buy. In the 1970s, that stopped, and it has never resumed. The average American worker earns now what he or she did in 1978. Try to wrap your head around no more real wage increase. For a country that had enjoyed steady real wage rises for a century, this is a traumatic event. How was it handled in the United States? Denial. I won't embarrass you by asking how many of you know what I just said to be the case. How many of you have dwelt in your mind on what it might do to a population used to a rising wage when it is no longer available? There was no discussion at the time or since. No debate in this country. What do we do about all of this? The closest you got were vague gestures in which somebody says, gee, the middle class seems to be fading away, as if this were, I don't know, some sort of cosmic effect, or maybe the result of sunspots or allergies, or who knows what. But an analysis, either of why it happened or of what its consequences were, no, nothing serious. Well, let me tell you what some of the results were. Number one, by far the most important socially, the women of the United States left the home where they had been sequestered for the earlier parts of American history and had to go out and do wage labor en masse. The only ones who had been doing that beforehand were black and brown women. They long been doing it because they had to. And the poorest among the whites. But now suddenly, all women, all the wives and mothers had to go out. There was no other way to sustain the fantasy of growth, of the American dream, of what had been experienced in the previous century. The second most important effect, Americans began to realize that the only way they could participate in further growth of consumption, the way they had been led to believe was somehow inherent in the American experience, besides sending their wives out to work, besides following a career as a worker in a factory, you could now go back to work and be a greeter at Walmart's. But beside that, you could borrow money. In the 1970s, the banks of the United States decided that the consumer, to whom they had never lent money before, they would now lend money to. In other words, the credit card, which until then had been American Express in the hands of rich people and businessmen, would now become socialized. Everybody's wallet would be crammed full of plastic cards. Live off them. And so the American working class, from around the 1970s to the present, accumulated debt. We are a debt-ridden society in the way we never were before. We became pioneers, not in covered wagons going west, but in what we could cram plastic in our wallets. All the growth of consumption in the last 40 years has been based on women's labor, women's earnings, and debt. Families have become much more complicated institutions to survive. We have the highest divorce rate in the world. We put our families under levels of pressure that would be impossible for anyone to sustain. American women consume more psychotropic drugs than any other population on the planet. Why? Because they are druggies? No, because we put them under impossible pressures, which blew up the family, since the mother was what held the emotional life of so many families together. And she was now as exhausted as the husband, coming back from her hours of work. The empire's foundation is beginning to crack. Well, you keep assuming more debt, which the American working class did. It borrowed. It had borrowed with government support for its house. That's how mortgages developed. For those of you who don't know, mortgages were never given to working class people to buy a home until the Great Depression. To get us out of the Great Depression, the government took the step of guaranteeing the mortgages so the banks could lend without a risk. Otherwise, they wouldn't have, because they never did. So the American Homeowner Society is a product of the government, not of private enterprise, which was too greedy and too frightened to ever do it. Home loaning. Then the car had to be paid for with loans because working class couldn't afford it. Then the credit card, so you could buy everything. And then in the last 20 years, a new indebtedness, the college student. So by now the family is dying, floating in levels of debt it cannot support because the underlying wage didn't go up, just the debts. And it doesn't take a PhD in economics for you to understand that if the underlying wage doesn't go up, you can't keep accumulating debt, because the time will come, and it's called 2008, when the credit system exploded. Cracks in the empire. This system is so committed to inequality that not only did it grow over the last 40 years as wages stopped rising. Of course, where would workers' income go? They couldn't grow. Their wages were flat. But they were becoming more productive all the time. The last 40 years are the computer, the robot, artificial intelligence, all of that. Workers' productivity goes up. Workers' wages are flat. Wages are what the employer gives you. Productivity is what you give the employer. If what the employer gives you is flat, and what you give the employer keeps rising, guess what? You have inequality. You're taking all your growing output and giving it to one small class of people. Employers are 1, 2, 3% of our population, if that. They get it. Even across COVID-19 pandemic, inequality got worse. And what did we do to the working class? after we gave them 40 years of losing everything, their families falling apart, their position in American society, their growing wealth, a kind of affirmation that somehow you're doing better. All of it's taken away. Then we hit them with COVID. Then we hit them with an inflation. And now we're hitting them with rising interest rates. Let me frighten you, if I may, if what I've said hasn't done that job already. There is an example in history of another working class over a small number of years being hit with economic blows on a scale of what's happening here. The example is Germany. And here's how it works. In the second half of the 19th century, as the British Empire is declining, the United States is not the only competitor looking to replace the British. There is another one, Germany. World War I defeats Germany. Britain, with its allies, defeat Germany. Throw them out of the competition. Wipe them out. Impose on the at the end a reparations they couldn't possibly pay. The German working class, which had been built up across the 19th century to believe it was creating a whole new globe. In German, it's called Das Deutsche Reich. That's like the German Empire. And it had, you know, territories in Asia, it had territories in Africa, and so on. All that was smashed when the unthinkable happened in 1914 to 1980. 18. Germany was defeated. The empire was taken away, literally. The British took the colonies in Africa away from the Germans and made them British colonies. It was a trauma for the German working class. It ended in 1918 with defeat. Within 4 years, early 1920, late 22, early 1923, literally a century ago, Germany then experienced the worst inflation in modern times anywhere in the West. In a period of 9 months, the German currency went from 6 Deutschmark to the dollar to 4 trillion Deutschmark to the dollar. Prices doubled over weeks at a time, every hour of the day. Any savings accumulated by a German family, and they were very frugal, were wiped out. Six generations saving money had enough money put away to buy a quarter pound of butter. They were done. And 5 years after that, in 1929, the Great Depression hit Germany. It was too much. You cannot hit a working class. Even the German working class, which was the best educated, most productive, and most progressive working class anywhere in Europe, no contest. Even that, it was too much. And in 1932, those German people, overwhelmed by what they had been put through, turned around and supported a little Austrian with a black mustache, Adolf Hitler, and you know the rest of the story. Don't be surprised that we have a resurgence of white supremacy, that we have characters like Trump. We're just living out, here we go, the same sad scenario. Denial, not explaining to people the foundation of what they're assuming, not talking honestly about its disappearance, the cracks, what it means when your empire has that fun ride up begin to be replaced by the much less fun ride down. We're in very deep trouble. Two or three examples, and then I'll move on.
You're listening to Richard Wolff on the United States of Denial. This is Independent Alternative Radio. For copies of this program and for the book Socialism by Danny Katch, Just call us at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that's 1-800-444-1977. Or go online, our website.